Hi guys, and welcome back to another episode of Sex Cells. If you're new here, this is a podcast about sex, relationships, society, culture, psychology, etc. I'm your host, Eliza, and this is a follow-up from last week's episode, which I started on self-esteem, and my toddler rudely interrupted me an hour in, so I finished it there, and I'm going to finish it up today, and then touch on a few more things. So I hope everyone is doing well. I hope I had a lot of people messaging me actually after last week about self-esteem and feeling like they've been really struggling to fix it, and they can hear these things and read these books and it's not working, and they're really, really stuck in their ways. And I just want to say, if that is you, don't continue your life trying to just be like, well, I'm stuck this way, or I've read a book and or three or four or whatever and Googled it heaps and I'm still really struggling to implement these things, or I can look in the mirror and tell myself I'm beautiful 10 times, but it's not working for me. A lot of it is going back to the root of what caused this and healing that from the stars. And even though you may be able to recognize it, some people don't know how to heal that root cause. So get some help from it. Find a counselor, a therapist, a coach, someone to guide and support you through it. And if you can't do it on your own, I think that's just the best way to go. And also the benefit of that is that it doesn't have to be, you know, a 3-year journey to improving your self-esteem. It can be something that you do over a period of like 2 months or whatever, and drastically improve the outlook and outcome of your life and how you feel about yourself. And it has a trickle effect, you know, it's a domino effect as well. Like all the things that can happen afterwards when you feel that you're worthy of a healthy relationship, you're worthy of a job that fulfills you and pays you well, and you're worthy of all these things, and you genuinely believe it about yourself rather than hoping, makes a huge difference in life. So anyway, enough about that. I will continue. What I wanted to just finish up on with self-esteem is, I mean, I guess I kind of just briefly touched on it, is talking about why it's actually important and why we need to have a higher self-esteem than what we currently do, or work on our self-esteem consistently. So the first thing is that people that have higher self-esteem are actually associated with having lower levels of anxiety, depression, and stress. So having higher levels of self-esteem, this is what I mean by that trickle-down effect, where you work on something and you are surprised what comes through. And I have a client that I'm starting with, and she came to me and she's like, I'm really drawn to your self-esteem program, but I also have like, you know, a lot of other issues that I don't know which to address in what order or whatever. And I said to her, well, this is what you're drawn to. Let's start with this and see how it trickles down, and it may actually heal some of those other things you're talking about or resolve them. And if not, then we'll get to them afterwards. Anyway, so having a high self-esteem literally improves your mental health. And when people have a positive view of themselves, they are better equipped to cope with life's challenges and setbacks. So moving on, like I guess as part of that as well, it increases your resilience. So you're more resilient in the face of adversity. You can bounce back from setbacks, failures, criticism, as you have a strong sense of self-worth and confidence in your abilities. And I know from my clients that it often isn't the setbacks in life that kind of like knock them off, being like, well, I got, you know, I didn't get this job, or I didn't get into this university and I gave up. No, it's so often the criticism of others, that external validation in order to feed and feel their worth, that is the really, really hard part for them to overcome and that we're working on. So when you have a higher level of self-esteem, that is one of the first things to drop off, that you are no longer impacted by your clients, your co-workers, your peers, your families, your friends, and their criticism, because people love to criticize others. And we criticize others for millions of reasons. Sometimes parents are stuck in their way, they think they know best. Or sometimes people just like to put other people down to make themselves feel better. It's a projection. There's a lot of jealousy, blah, 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 blah. You know, I was reflecting on this recently when a girl I know who, I might have mentioned this a few weeks ago, I can't remember, but she's extremely successful now as a coach, and she reached out to me years and years ago, like 6 or so years ago, maybe more, 6, 7 years ago, saying like, I know you studied this. I want to be a life coach too. Do you think I should do it? And I was so jaded about it because I felt so insecure about being at that point really young. And I was like, yeah, do it if you want, but, you know, make sure you have a niche and it's not easy and like blah, 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 blah. And I was just like that. And because of it was a projection of how I was feeling about myself. Whereas if someone asked me this now, I would say, go for it. If you feel drawn to something, throw yourself into it. If you have, you know, try to have a safety landing, obviously, like financial. You don't want to end up homeless if you just give up everything you've got and chase a dream. But set yourself up and then absolutely go for it, or find a way that you can do it and chase your dreams whilst also maintaining a stream of income or whatever it is. Like, my perspective and advice of this will change because, one, I've matured. Two, I'm very conscious, at least, of when I am projecting at minimum and what I'm projecting or trying to avoid all projections. And three, I will never not celebrate someone's success, and I will never not tell someone to go for it if that is what they want. And often people minimize it, being like, oh, well, you know, like, maybe I'm not smart enough, blah, blah, blah. Like, that doesn't mean that your peers should go, oh, you're right, you might not be smart enough or qualified enough or experienced enough. Maybe you shouldn't. You know, you have to. And that actually is another really good point, which reminds me, is that when you have low self-esteem, your inner voice isn't pushing you, saying, you can do this, go for it, give it a shot. Your inner voice is trying to find a way to hold you back into your comfort zone of insecurity and being risk adverse and not putting yourself out there. So it's going to say, like, you'll embarrass yourself, or this will be cringy, it'll fail, you get 10 followers and that'll be it, or you'll never get a client or whatever. That is just a really clear example of how your low self-esteem and the way you talk to yourself, it is not just, oh, I feel ugly, or I feel unsuccessful, or I won't end up in a healthy relationship. It is the constant narrative that your mind and subconscious feeds you when you have a low self-esteem, and you believe it because you're like, well, these are my thoughts. They're coming from me. That's my subconscious. That's my intuition. And sometimes your intuition, especially if you have trauma and low self-esteem, can't always be trusted. Like, I know a lot of people talk about, like, follow your gut instinct. Anyone with trauma can have a skewed intuition. And here's the thing. I'm going off topic, but whatever. Most people actually do have trauma. Like, I feel like there's big T trauma, you know, starvation, like famine, war, serious childhood adversity, neglect and abuse, etc. And there's little T trauma, which is the snide comments your mom made to you your entire upbringing about the clothes you wore, or being bullied in primary school and high school. Like, those kind of things are still trauma, and most of us have experienced trauma. And the thing about trauma is that changes our lens in one way or another. So you may find that, like, you're entering into relationships and you're like, well, you might just have the lens that, you know. And as per usual, my beautiful toddler just woke up 20 minutes into his what was supposed to be a 2-hour nap. So yeah, there's a good chance this might not come out on a Wednesday. I'll see how I go. He's actually just eating lunch next to me, so we'll see how chill he is or not. Hopefully that keeps him occupied for a little bit. We will see. And unfortunately, I can't do later tonight. I'm booked out with clients. So yeah, apologies. You know, someone actually asked me the other day, she was like, she makes podcasts, and she was like, how do you edit, and what systems do you use to edit your podcasts and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, I don't edit. I just, like, I come in and out with my toddler waking up or cutting out randomly and just upload what I've got. I don't have time to edit or have an editor or whatever. So yeah, you guys are good. You guys bear with it. That's life. So I remember I was talking about trauma. I don't remember in what context. I think I was talking about how it impacts the lens we have as well, and how we address things or approach relationships and people, something like that. Anyways, so Moving along, the other thing about having high self-esteem is that you have healthier relationships when your self-esteem is higher. And this is backed by so much research. It's you're more likely to set and maintain boundaries. You're more likely to communicate effectively. You're more likely to engage in mutual respect with your partners, friends, and family members. So it has an overarching positive impact on all of your relationships. And it also means that you have the esteem to put in your own boundaries and say what you're okay with, what you're not okay with, what you will accept or not accept. And it will help you also gauge for future partners or potential romantic connections or friendships. If you'll be able to tell more easily, okay, like I will accept or not accept this, or I will cut down the people that aren't going to maintain your boundaries. But basically you have a better instinct on who's going to respect your boundaries. And when you have a lack of boundaries and you have low self-esteem, you're much more willing to accept and take shit from people, is what I'm trying to get at there. I was trying to find a way to word it nicer than that, but that's just the fact of it. So yeah, it is something that drastically helps with your relationships as well. When you know your worth, you know what respect you deserve, and you're able to communicate it with ease. So the other thing as well that's good about it is you have greater motivation, greater goal achievement. So when you have higher self-esteem, you have a positive self-image, and so you're more likely to set ambitious goals. And not only do you set them, you pursue them. And you pursue personal growth opportunities and you persist in the face of obstacles, which just kind of brings back to that resilience. Mm-hmm. So I think that that's a really amazing quality as well, that you are like, I can do this. I can get through this. And this is that inner voice that changes in your mind. Like, go for it, girl, like, or boy, or whatever. Like, come on, mate, let's do it. Your inner voice changes for the better. And because of that as well, another good point is you have better decision making. You make better decisions because you can trust your own judgment and intuition. Oh, that was what my point was. I'm not sure if I ever got to the end of the point about talking about big trauma, little trauma, whatever. But the point is that if you have trauma, that skews your lens, but it also skews your intuition on people. So some people that push saying, trust your intuition, your intuition knows. Sometimes your intuition is guided by trauma. If you were taught as a child, adults, you know, will never respect you, or people can't be trusted, or all men are aggressive, that is what your intuition is going to tell you when a man approaches you or whatever, or all women just want ABC. If you have seen that through your mother's relationship or whatever, that is your intuition. Oh, she just wants me for so-and-so. So that is why it's really important. A huge benefit of improving your self-esteem is also becoming more aligned with your innate intuition. And when I work with my clients, I don't push saying, what did your intuition say about this? I will ask that if they're reflecting on a situation, for example, like what do you feel it could have been that really set you off about this interaction? Why was it that this simple daily, what would occur to me be a very normal interaction? What was it about it that made you feel really hurt or upset? What does your intuition tell you? Was it the microaggressions? Was it the tone of voice? Was it the gender of the person? Was it what they said or whatever? So that is the only time where I was use intuition, and everything else I kind of don't go down the road of saying let your intuition guide you, because for a lot of us, our intuition is not spot on. It's not accurate. It needs fine tuning. And unless you have a healthy esteem where you can easily set, maintain boundaries, communicate effectively, have a sense of self-worth, your intuition is going to be a little bit off balance. And people with that are highly intuitive or have extremely high emotional intelligence and can really read the room and understand it. Often that comes from trauma, what they've learned as a child, that they have to be extremely hypervigilant and focus on everyone's emotions around them so that they know, okay, here's what I can do and here's what I can't do. I can walk through the house right now and put the TV on because mom's in a good mood, or I can't do that because dad's been drinking. So it's not always a super, super positive thing to have extremely high
intuition and inner perspective on the behaviors of others. Slow down. Okay, so the last thing I'll say on this is when you have high self-esteem, research actually shows that you experience better physical health outcomes. So you have lower levels of inflammation, improved function, and faster recovery from illness or injury. And I find this extremely fascinating because you guys know I always talk about this massively. I don't know if you guys can hear this, but there is a downpour outside my window right now and I can hear it through my headphones. I'm sorry if it's distracting. I'm not sure if you guys will be able to hear it or not. It's crazy. But not only is it that, you know, if you have high levels of self-esteem, you'll be engaging in sport or going to the gym or whatever, or improving your fitness. It's not just that. It's also when you do the opposite or you have lower self-esteem and you feel worthless, you people please, you let people walk over you. It is literally backed by science and known by anyone that studies this, that you are more likely to have super high levels of inflammation in your body and pain and injury when you're not living life to alignment. And God, is this true? The kids I work with, as children and teenagers that had, you know, some of the worst cases of trauma, have really severe aches and pains in their bodies at such a young age. And those that don't realize it are because they're so disconnected and dissociated from their bodies and feelings that they can't recognize it often. And I see, you know, issues with arthritis and major inflammation, so many chronic health issues. And I remember when I was seeing like a remedial masseuse who was quite spiritual, but she was saying it's really interesting how so many of her clients that come in with the same pain often have the same jobs, working in healthcare, working as nurses and social workers, and really tough jobs that takes on a lot of people's vulnerability, a lot of like draining energy, etc. And it manifests as pain in their body. And I think I spoke about this last week or the week before, but that book, When the Body Says No, really goes into this, how, and this is why chronic health conditions are also significantly more prevalent in women. And this is because women are more likely, or should I say less likely, to be assertive, less likely to be communicative about their needs, less likely to put their needs first. Don't come at me. This is research. But yeah, it's really, really fascinating how this happens and how our bodies, we can make our bodies sick. So I do think it's something to be aware of. And yeah. Oh, there was one more point, and this is an obvious point, but I'll wrap it up on here when it comes to the benefits. You have enhanced confidence and assertiveness when you have higher levels of self-esteem, which is pretty obvious, but I just want to kind of finish on that the overarching thing is having an enhanced confidence and assertiveness will literally help you in every aspect of your life. Your work, your social interactions, and your personal relationships. It'll help you pursue opportunities. You'll take risks. You'll assert your needs. You'll assert your boundaries more effectively. If you have higher self-esteem, it overall will just contribute to a better well-being and life satisfaction. You're going to be able to navigate your life and the challenges that come with resilience. You're going to be more likely to build healthier relationships. You're going to be more likely to pursue your goals with confidence and motivation. So get on the train. Make this your fucking goal for the next 3 months, 6 months, year, whatever it takes. Fix this. Start with this and see what comes from that, because you'll be so surprised how, you know, you may be like, well, I have low self-esteem, but I also have anxiety and I've got pain and I've got this and that. Well, why don't you start with this and actually see what the trickle-down effect is? You could be pleasantly surprised or amazed. And what have you got to lose? I mean, let's just leave it there. What have you got to lose? Give it a fucking go. If you want to improve your life, sometimes the opportunity is not going to fall into your lap. And you got to do it. You got to invest your time. You got to invest your energy. You got to invest your resources into it as well. Just as I have my own coach or whatever that I've been seeing, who not for personal development, it's more on like a business side of things. But if you want to develop something in yourself, you can read about it. You can get 50 resources. Or sometimes you just need to go to an expert and give me the fine-tuned advice on how to go forth, how to do this, how to benefit this, whatever. So yeah, I hope that wraps that up nicely. The other thing I wanted to talk about today, this is just taking a major, major turn of events, is I wanted to bring up attachment styles a little bit, because every time I do like a question box on my Instagram about what should I talk about in my podcast or whatever, so many people ask about, discuss attachment styles and whatever. And recently I've been doing a couple of reels, which are videos on Instagram, talking about attachment styles, as you guys know. And the reason I've been doing that is because I find that you guys really connect to it. And I always get people messaging me about it. We always have great conversations. And it seems to be something that a lot of people, no one talked about this 3, 4, 5 years ago. Literally no one talked about it. But all of a sudden it is so prevalent and everyone's like really putting a super high importance on it, and placing it extremely high as an identifying factor of their personality or who they are as a person. And I'm not saying there's anything necessarily wrong with that, but I will say that we have to be conscious of the way that we label ourselves and how sometimes we can dismiss things within ourselves. We can validate ourselves with our labels. Well, I'm not going out to the party because I'm anxious. Well, I'm not doing this because I'm I've got an avoidant attachment style. And yeah, I'm not messaging you back because of that avoidant attachment. You know, like, it's not an excuse. And it's also not an event, an identity that we should be adopting. And I kind of wanted to talk about it because in my mind, I was posting this information thinking, okay, my goal of making these reels is that someone will watch it, be lured in by thinking, oh, I've got this attachment style, like be attracted to it because of that, but learn something about themselves more significantly rather than about their attachment style. Learn more about the way they communicate, what they might tolerate, the way that they are, who they're attracted to, why they're attracted to that or whatever. But then as soon as I posted one yesterday, I posted one on being avoidant and how people with avoidant attachment styles often have the ick and get the ick more frequently or have higher levels of expectations as a way to keep their partners at an emotional distance. It's a defense mechanism. And then I was thinking about it afterwards being like, this sits right with me, but I also don't love how I don't want to fall into the trap of becoming so heavily dominated about talking about attachment theory when I don't actually hold that level of significance to it. And I think a lot of people that are coaches in particular talk heavily about attachment. Sorry, that's my toddler. Are you okay, Remy? All done? I'm so sorry, guys. This is so unprofessional about how much my toddler is interrupting me. And I haven't done anything with him. He'll probably come back in 2 minutes. And I might just wrap it up and just maybe I'll keep going tomorrow and upload it a day late. Or maybe I'll just upload a smaller one today. Who fucking knows? But anyway, I find that a lot of coaches in particular really, really focus on an attachment theory and attachment framework because they themselves have been insecure or avoidant or anxiously attached, and they sell their story as like, you know, I was this and now I'm secure attached, and that is their selling point. That is why they hound it through your social media so often to get you to work with them, which is great and it's fair enough because, you know, they've healed that attachment. They want to go through that. But the reason why I don't think it's that important is, first of all, not everyone is, it's almost a spectrum. And there are times where you will develop anxious attachments or avoidant attachment tendencies, even though you've been a securely attached person with no trauma or whatever your entire life so far. And An example of this is, which I was talking about this actually on Instagram with a girl, saying that, you know, if you are a securely attached person and all of a sudden you get a partner who is, say, like, fly in, fly out, or they work different hours where they can't communicate with you, and you're used to having relationships where you talk during the day and get messages and phone calls, and all of a sudden you go 2 weeks not hearing things, you may develop anxious attachment tendencies, because you may be like, well, as soon as they're here, I'm clingy and I want, you know, reassurance, and I want, I rely on them to make me feel reassured within the relationship. Or perhaps, you know, someone is really over the top messaging you and constant, and you're in a relationship with them, and then you think, okay, you stop replying as much, and maybe you're a little bit avoidant or whatever of them. Doesn't mean that that is now your attachment style, and you must have endured some secret trauma history that you can't remember. These things come and go throughout our life. And I post about this on my Instagram story yesterday, being like, I studied, as you guys know, I went to university for many years, and I studied counseling, behavioral science, relationship counseling, life coaching, and sexology. All of this is to do with psychology, behavioral sciences, whatever, and relationships. And attachment barely came up. We learned about it. We learned the framework. We understand what it is. But when it comes to a therapeutic framework, it's not that important to unpack in order to have someone move forward. In fact, in my last job, we literally worked from a framework, a therapeutic framework called attachment regulation and competency. And even then, we didn't have this fixation on attachment styles. It was more about the attachment you have to a caregiver or whatever, like developing that. It was for children specifically. So I just think don't reduce yourself to your attachment style. Don't bank your entire identity on what your attachment style is, and focus instead on what are the areas that it may be impacting your relationship. So, for example, rather than being like, I'm anxiously attached and that is all you need to know, and therefore, you know, everything I do is kind of validated even though I know it's shitty, etc., or I need to heal my anxious attachment. Instead, heal the parts of you that are like, I don't have high enough self-esteem to assert my needs and boundaries. I rely on my partner to make me feel good and safe in my relationships. Heal those parts. It doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, about the attachment style or whatever. Or if you have a disorganized attachment, which is what some people think is, you know, the most challenging and difficult attachment, you don't need to be healing the disorganized attachment, you need to be healing the significant trauma that you endured as a child, which has led to that. Because people don't have disorganized attachment styles without significant trauma. So that is what needs to be healed. Heal your trauma. All right, that was my toddler falling over and whacking his head on the ground. Yeah, so I'm going to finish this here. I don't even know if I'll upload this because it is that level of, I feel like, unprofessional to have my toddler stop starting this 5 times now. But also, I've been so busy every evening seeing clients that I really don't have I really don't have another time to podcast. So if you see this and you hear this, forgive me. I've got to figure out an alternative. Actually, he's getting increased childcare from next week, so I'll have a specific day and time that I can actually do it without interruption. Yes, that's the microphone. But anyways, Mama. Forgive me. And I'll see you next week without interruption. Say bye. Bye.